Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kay. I'm Laura Mize, speech-language pathologist, and today is Thursday, December 4th, 2008, at 6 o'clock Eastern Time, and tonight I'm so excited about the show. I say that every time, but this is something we've wanted to talk about for weeks, and we're going to talk about using pictures to help children learn to communicate. Our call-in number is 1-718-766-4332, and we'd love to have any questions that you might be having about using pictures to help your late-talking toddler or preschooler learn to express his or her needs and wants. And we're going to talk about a couple of real different specific systems tonight. But the first thing we need to do is talk about the pros and cons of using picture systems. And there are lots of myths and misconceptions concerning how to use these, and we're going to talk about those as well. But and we're also waiting on Kate. She's stuck in traffic. I'm hoping that she's going to call in any second.
I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, good. I was going to say, you just blurt out, I'm here.
You,
I'm here.
Did you run to the phone, Laura? You sound tired. Sound winded. I'm just exasperated. I am still very much stuck in traffic. But, hey, we can chit-chat the way we always do. So
it'll be like real life for you tonight, then, in the car, talking on the phone.
There you go. Tonight's topic is PECS, Picture Exchange Communication System.
Right. And first, I just want to talk about picture systems in general and kind of the pros and cons of using those. You want to start with the pros or start with the cons?
Let's start positive. We'll end negative.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah, as we normally do in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Pros, I think it does give a nonverbal child who wants to communicate another avenue, and especially a child who hasn't, again, learned how to talk, or a child who hasn't quite gotten the hang of signing. Pictures definitely give them another way or another method to express their wants and needs. I think another pro of this system is that when you do it correctly, it is pretty easy to implement with kids who kind of have some prerequisite or foundational skills.
Right.
Help me
plays to some kids' strengths, and that by that I mean,
yeah.
I know, Laura, you see on a fairly routine basis, as I do, kids who we say are very visual, and that means,
right.
And I kind of say it this way to parents a lot, if they see it, they get it. But words in and of themselves for some kids, for late talkers or non-talkers, words sometimes mean absolutely nothing, and yet you see that, gee, when he sees something happen or he sees the way something is used, he really understands it pretty well. And so those kids I describe as being very visual, and that means they understand it if they see it, but to hear it, just to have it explained or to hear those words, they're not really understanding that. And those kids
right.
seem to be good candidates for PECS because it's a picture-based system and they get those pictures, or at least we help them get them, and they can be, you know, pretty communicative with pictures. And any communication, in my opinion, needs nothing. So.
Right, and it is very concrete. And sometimes those kids who are very visual and who, for those kids that auditorily or hearing a word, those things don't mean so much. When you have the trade a picture and they get an item that they really, really want, that is such a concrete event to them. And it is like a little light bulb goes off and they think, hey, yeah, this is something I can do. Trying to imitate those sounds you're making with your mouth, my mouth doesn't work that way yet. And this is something that I think that lots of those kinds of kids really get. If you introduce it correctly, and if you have done your homework and set the system up so that they can be successful, and we're going to tell you how to do all that, too. What would
good.
Be another pro? Can you think of another pro?
I was rereading your article on your website about picture exchange last night, and something you kind of alluded to was that some kids, even if they have some words, they don't necessarily use those words functionally. You know, they're not really requesting things. They're not really, it's just they'll blurt out a word or maybe even a phrase that they've learned, but they're not using them. They're not saying ball, like get me the ball. They're just kind of randomly labeling things, and it's not,
yeah.
Right. And they don't really seem to understand, gee, if I say ball, mommy's likely to grab the ball and hand it to me. And I've had great luck with those kids, you know, really kind of teaching pretty quickly. Words get you what you want. And I think you refer to that word manding, which is very ABA, isn't it?
Right.
But that's the fancy term. Requesting, yeah. So, and I've had a number of those kids, and I'll pretty quickly say, hey, let's try some pictures. And then, well, we can move into this later. But, yeah, it's a great jumping off point just to kind of quickly teach. Words have meaning, and words get you what you want, and that's why you use words initially, usually anyway, and that works well for those kids. So,
well, and it works
another
well,
bonus.
Yeah, and for kids who just don't even know how to initiate yet, kids who might know what they want, you know, they're wandering around the kitchen, you kind, or they're in the kitchen going and you have no clue what means. But they're clearly wanting something. It's another good way for those kids to, a real concrete way to teach them how to request things too and it not be so darn random.
Right. And I haven't used it as much in my practice this way, but I guess it's also an appropriate choice for kids who technically are verbal, but that their articulation or they have such a severe phonological disorder that what they say maybe only mom and dad catch, or sometimes they even struggle. And so even though technically they're talking, their words aren't really meaning much to you know, a listener that's not very familiar with them. So pictures could be used in that context very well also.
I think so too. And I think it would really reduce the frustration on the part of everybody for a situation with a kid like that. If you had a kid that really was trying so hard, but despite his best efforts, he's still not understood because of all of the articulation or speech sound errors. So pictures, again, would reduce his frustration because he would know that he could get his point across without, you know, 10 minutes of really trying and either giving up and walking away or falling apart and having a temper tantrum. So
right.
I think that is another, that would be another pro. Let's talk about the cons real quick.
Okay.
My only con, well, I have a couple. The big con, I think, of a picture system is you have to have it with you. And sometimes when, to use, and sometimes parents, you know, who are so frazzled that they can't really find their glasses or they routinely lose their cell phone or their keys, keeping up with one more piece of stuff is sometimes a challenge for other parents. It's, you know, you have to kind of be on the ball and have the pictures with you and really be ready for those situations when you're going to communicate. I think sometimes it's hard to use pictures with a new person for a kid or another person to kind of know, oh, this is what they mean. But I think that pictures are probably easier in that respect than signs, because I think you would understand if a kid gave you a picture of a cup. Oh, I think he means he wants a drink.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's kind of a pro and a con. But certainly having to keep up with another set of stuff or, you know, being able to use it with multiple adults, you know, that's kind of a con. Can you think of some more cons you want to talk about?
Well, I would say in general terms it's really far less natural just in and of itself because it's kind of a separate thing, separate from the child or from the adult. I mean, signs, once you know them, it's like words, they're always with you. You can use your hands to gesture and communicate what you want. But a picture, it's just kind of a created, you know, stopgap measure to get a kid to communicate, which is, it's a great thing. But, yeah, it's not, you said, you've always got to have it with you. And I've had a lot of kids who, even if they get it and even if they can use it pretty effectively, kids tend to like them, and on the one hand, you want them accessible to kids so that they are able to communicate when they want to. On the other hand, they tend to pull them off, you know, whether you put them on the fridge or you put them in a communication book, they get lost, they get, you know, and it's, then you're, you know, constantly trying to keep up with them and make more, and there's the added hassle of whether you, we'll talk later about what we use or what can be used, but there's some work involved. You know, you have to get the picture. You have to either download it or print it. And we generally laminate ours so they don't get destroyed. And, you know, so there's some man hours involved in just keeping up. And you have to keep adding, if the child continues to build on their communication skills, you have to keep adding pictures, and, you know, and there's not all, you're not always going to have an appropriate picture, but.
Yeah, but those are all a small price to pay for being able to teach a kid to communicate, and there are some children that this really is their first eye-opening experience with, oh my goodness, the world is such a better place when I have a way to tell somebody what I want and they actually understand me and then I get it and then we're all happy. And just, I think, too, teaching that turn-taking piece, the reciprocity that we've really talked about when we really, the last few weeks, have talked about children with autism. And again, PECS, or the Picture Exchange Communication System, was originally designed to be used for children with autism, but now it's used for lots of big variety of children who can't communicate. Again, we've already talked about with severe articulation problems. Children with Down syndrome tend to do pretty well with PECS because they, you know, as a population, are pretty visual kids. It really has been adapted to a wide variety of kids who are struggling to learn to communicate. I don't really see anything written or, especially when you look in the PECS manual, that says it's just for a certain population. It can be used for any kid who's having difficulty communicating.
And I've used it on a wide variety myself, you know, sometimes for long term, and sometimes it's a good starting point. We may bump them up to, or switch to signs, or use a combination of signs and pictures and words, you know, but
Yeah,
it can be a good for kids who aren't. Go, sorry, Laura.
Well, that's just been my experience, too. It is a good starting place for a lot of kids, and some kids do end up using it long-term, but more often than not, it's a really good initial step to teach a kid how to communicate, or kind of give them something to do while we're waiting on their little mouth to come together and then really be able to talk or sign. Okay. So let's talk about, we've already kind of said the word PECS. Again, PECS means Picture Exchange Communication System, and that is mostly an expressive system, meaning that you use it to tell other people or for an expressive language task to let other people know what your needs are. But I don't want to forget to talk about that pictures can also be used to improve receptive language or how a kid understands. And I think pictures, again, are good for those same kinds of kids that we've talked about, kids that have difficulty making connections between words and objects or words and actual events. Again, it gives them a real concrete thing to depend on so that they can understand, oh, that word means this. She's talking about this. So the picture does that. And lots of preschools also use, and elementary schools too, picture schedules for those really visual kids, again, that may not understand the routine of school, but you show them, you know, what their day is going to be like. You know, first we're going to come in, and then we're going to have circle time, and then we're going to have an art activity, and then we're going to go to the gym, you know, so they might use a picture schedule in that way so that a kid receptively, or what he understands, would be supplemented by the use of pictures. So it can be used either way. But we're really talking tonight about expressive language use, or, again, the Picture Exchange Communication System. Therapists just call this PECS, P-E-C-S. And I wanted to go ahead and give the website for the official PECS website is PECS.com, and that's where you can find the manual. You can also get some pretty elaborate instructions for using PECS there. But the last time I looked at that site, I felt like it was a little geared toward professionals. Have you looked at that site lately, Kate?
No, not in a long time, frankly.
Yeah, the wording and just, it's not as real life every day. So some parents might find the site a little bit challenging to kind of navigate through, and it's not as down home, real life with the instructions on the website, but the manual is actually pretty straightforward. And, you know, it was written, let's see, let me get the real specific things. The latest version was in 2002. There's a training manual that's helpful for both parents and professionals. You can order that system at PECS. I've ordered, I've probably have 3 or 4 PEX manuals floating around the house or my caseload at any given time, and I've gotten some of mine off eBay, and that's been kind of a cheaper way to buy that. I'm not even sure how much the system is to purchase new, but you might try to find it on eBay to get a deal. But if you want to really use PEX in its truest form, I do loan or recommend that parents go ahead and just buy that manual, because I do think it's helpful to read that information and get those pointers up front. Do you loan that to parents, Kate, or really?
I have only a handful of times, really. I have made copies of the video.
Yeah.
It's not terribly long, and I think there's a longer, more thorough video that's produced. Mine is, I don't know, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, which I kind of like that it shows a variety of kids using it and how effectively they can use it. But it's not, I think, their most thorough training video type. This is just kind of an introduction and gives, you know, shows some kids using it. And they talk some about the theory and how you implement it and stuff, but it's, I think there might be another one out there that's more thorough. So.
Well, and I think the one that you're talking about is pretty old. And frankly,
mm-hmm.
some of the children are pretty low functioning, and some
mm-hmm.
parents see it and then get a little bit panicked because they feel like, oh, no, my child isn't there. That's, you know, he's not that bad. And so I haven't shown loaned the video or the DVD. It's not even in DVD. It's just on VHS, isn't it? The copies
right.
that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done that in a long time because I had so many parents react
be
a little
put
bit
off
negative.
By, yeah, how
yeah,
some of the kids
yeah.
look, yeah.
And not be as positive about it as I would want them to be. So, and sometimes our caseloads differ a little bit, and I would probably loan my manual out and be a little bit more apt to get it back than maybe you would be too sometimes.
Right.
So, but that's if you think that using this kind of system is going to be more of a long-term solution for your child, I would definitely recommend going ahead and ordering the manual so that you can get the whole background and kind of know what you're doing from there.
Because it is, I mean, it's not a difficult system, but there are some very specific steps, and if
right.
it's not introduced and implemented properly, it can kind of get messed up fairly easily, and so the manual really does a nice job of specifically teaching how you're supposed to do it the right way.
Right, and I'm never really a stickler about, oh, we have to do things this way, but let me tell you, with PEX, I'm kind of a stickler about that
mm-hmm.
with the families that I see, and especially, you know, in our early intervention system, we have what's called kind of the team approach, where you might have several different therapists working with the kid, and it really ticks me off. We are working really hard on introducing pictures to a kid and have a very set way that we want to do it because, again, PEX has been thoroughly researched and they have gone to and taken the time and the trouble to lay this whole system out. They've kind of worked all the kinks out. I'm going to have a therapist come in and kind of mess up what we've started or derail mom and dad and get them started in a different way that a kid is obviously not ready for yet. It kind of makes me mad.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that I feel like if when we do the PEX approach in its truest form, it really does kind of cut out some of those headaches because you avoid some of those mistakes. And we're going to talk about what those are too. All right. So with PEX, the only prerequisite that you pointed out today when we were talking about the show that the PEX people say that a kid should be able to do before you decide, okay, is this going to be a good system for my kid or not, is that they be able to grasp and hold the picture. And that is the only requirement. And unless you have a child who is very severely impaired in his motor skills, this is probably going to be a system that would work.
And I have to say, I guess it's the reflection of the population that I treat, but I, in 10 years, haven't had a child who couldn't grasp and hold a picture. I mean, I know they're out there, but
yeah.
even with fairly severe CP and, you know, usually have one hand that works pretty well, or, you know,
right.
that doesn't limit it very much, really. That includes most kids.
Yeah, I would say I've probably only had a handful of kids like you that
mm-hmm.
I would think that was a skill that they couldn't achieve. We have a little girl that we both treat right now with Rett syndrome, and we've made some modifications with the ways we use pictures with her. She is not a very good holder because of her motor challenges in her hands, but we actually have used pictures with a switch, and she's done pretty well with that. And for if you don't know what that term means, it's kind of like a big button. Big Mac is the name of the company that used to do it like 10 years ago. What is the name of her current one?
I call it New Big Mac.
Yeah, me too.
In other words, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
But the you can get an augmentative device, which, you know, augmentative just means extra, you're going to supplement. But it really, it kind of looks like an easy button.
Right.
From the commercials on TV, but it's a button and it's got a clear cover and you can lift that cover up and stick a picture inside. And then it's a voice output system, meaning that mom or I or whoever record what the picture is. So if the picture is of goldfish crackers, we're going to record fish. And then she's able to hit that switch or hit that button, and the voice output says in our recorded message, fish, and then she gets the fish. So, again, she couldn't hold the picture, but we modified it in a way. And she's a great smacker, so she loves to hit things. That's her big trick and her big interest, and that kind of keeps her motivated. So that's how we've modified and can use a picture system with a kid that might not be such a good holder or grasper.
Right.
And I think the other prerequisite that I always really want to make sure that we do is that a kid actually likes something. And, you know, you would think, well, that's a given. Every kid likes something. But I have had a handful of kids over my career that I really couldn't find anything that they consistently liked. Or there just might be one or two things. So, you know, it might be a favorite food or a really favorite toy that they're almost obsessed with. And those are the things that you pick first. And I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself with the motivators. But let's just go ahead and talk about that. When you want to implement a picture system, the very first thing you're going to do is not take pictures of every single thing in your house. You know, you're going to take pictures of things that a kid really, really likes. And for us, what's our all-time favorite thing to use, Kate?
Mine is cheese balls.
I was going to say junk food.
No.
any kind of food that a kid really, really likes is what we're going to start with first, because all of us are so motivated by food, and especially toddlers, and especially, you know, you're not going to use green beans or broccoli or anything like that. You're going to use something that they would actually request, and more often than anything, that's a cookie or a cracker or M&Ms or fruit snacks or something like that. You know, you want to pick their very, very favorite food. And then I think you already alluded to this about taking a digital picture of that, and that's going to be a better representation to use than the suggested line drawing or cartoon-like pictures. Kate, you had a story about that this week that I think you wanted to share.
Oh,
picture selection.
Yeah, it was a situation where a speech therapist who works with a child that I see thought pictures would be a good option for this child, and I didn't really disagree with that necessarily, although he did have some what I consider to be prerequisite skills for signing, and that was that he could point and he could wave, not 100% consistently, but did do both. So, you know, my preference, if there is a choice, is to kind of see how we do with signs, leaving the door open for pictures. But anyway, she wanted to do signs, pictures, and that was her professional right to make that choice, no doubt about it. But she brought a communication book with her, and in it I assume they were board maker pictures, which is kind of a trademark name of a company that sells, I guess, CDs, and then you can print out, and they look like you said, little line drawings. And I think they've gotten better. They used to be all black and white. Now they have some color, but still, it's not nearly as obvious as a picture of the actual, you know, if your child wants this particular cup, or you're going to give her Oreo cookies, and it's a picture of Oreo cookies, you know, that's more obvious. And also, what she had with her were these really very small, you know, maybe
right.
not even an inch by an inch, which made for a handy little book. But, you know, I mean, you think of kids' things, especially kids who were 2 years old, they tend to be larger, you know, they needed
right.
to be. And these were itty-bitty little pictures that were computer-generated of kind of line stick drawing kinds of things. And, you know, I could see for an older child who had been introduced and was functioning well with a picture exchange system, that would be a great thing. But for a two-year-old boy who had never had any exposure or experience using pictures, I thought, well, what are you going to do with those? You know, it was just
right.
like, that's maybe great for an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old, but not
well,
really a
2-year-old. Yeah, it was a double mm-hmm. whammy, too, because not only was the picture unrealistic for 2-year-olds, who, again, are very concrete, who might not be able to associate that the little line drawing of the cup even means the same thing as his cup. You know, a lot of the kids that we're using or recommending using these systems with really do have some pretty big cognitive challenges. So for them to be able to even associate a line drawing with their real cup, you know, may not happen for a long, long time. So, you know, that it was kind of a double whammy, because not only were the pictures abstract, probably, they were too little, too. And I leave them pretty big. I mean, I'm thinking when I do them, they're more like picture sizes like I would print, like a 3x5 or a 4x6. And so I leave them pretty big. I don't know if you leave yours that big. I think you have a kind of a standard set of pictures that you use of your toys. Are yours that big?
No. What I do, because I do like, it depends on the child, really, but my standard thing is my loving husband routinely prints them out for me with a really good printer, and mine are usually maybe 3x3, 3.5x3.5, but I take kind of a close-up picture of the object
yeah.
with nothing else. You know, it's just the cup or just
me
the Oreo
too.
Cookies or just and the... Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say, and I really caution parents. Sometimes parents will kind of get ahead of me, and they'll want to go ahead and take the pictures, and I'll get there. And they've put the object that they want to take the picture of right on the kitchen counter, and it's surrounded by 50 other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at it and think, okay, I'm not sure what this is supposed to be, what picture this is supposed to be, because there are too many things in the background, or the background is just too distracting. You know, maybe they've put it on a chair, but you can still see the wallpaper in the background. So I usually recommend that a parent, like, take it with, like, maybe put a towel over a chair or on a table, like a white towel, so that there is nothing else in the picture except the object. And I do the same thing about getting pretty close up, so that there's no
mm-hmm.
doubt about what the picture is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of my standard, and generally that works.
Yeah.
On the side.
Yeah. I do that, too. The other thing that you already mentioned, too, is we laminate our pictures. And years ago, before, you know, now you can get those great little laminating machines at Walmart or an office supply store for $30-$35. Mine has just broken. It's smells like the whole house is about to catch on fire when you plug it in now, so I've got a new one of those on my Christmas list. But those are pretty cheap now, and if you think that you're going to use these kind of as a long-term solution for your kid, the $30 or $35 I think is a good investment. You can also get those laminated at an office place like Kinko's or some other copy place. They probably could laminate those for you.
Yeah, the big places like Office Max and Staples do them too.
Yeah. The other thing that I used to do when those places weren't so prevalent is buy clear contact paper and laminate them myself that way. But now that I've now that I'm not as poor, I've gone the other route.
Gotten fancy in your old age.
Yeah.
Sometimes the contact paper can be good. You know, you talk, Laura, about how the computer-generated board maker, whatever company, I think there are a couple, I don't want to single them out, but,
right.
You know, they're kind of abstract. Really, there are the kids that we see sometimes don't even really get that the actual picture represents the object. And so, and I see a lot of therapists, frankly, miss that fact. You know, they think that every kid understands that the picture of the Oreo somehow represents the Oreo, or you know what I mean? And to think that they're going to get that a little cartoon-like picture represents it is really a stretch for some kids, because some kids don't even get that the picture, the real picture of the actual object represents the object, you know?
Right.
So,
and sometimes I struggle with that when I look at those little bitty pictures. I have to see the printed word to really think, okay, what are those brown things supposed to be? And if unless I see cookie, I might not know myself. So
right.
It is a real stretch. The other thing that I used to do that I haven't done in a long time because I haven't had a kid that needed this, I do think I tried it with our little girl that we mentioned that had Rett syndrome maybe a year ago, but now she doesn't have to do this anymore. But it's use the actual object and say, take, if you're going to trade for goldfish crackers, take an index card, just a blank index card, and put some goldfish crackers on there, and then use the contact paper or even clear packing tape, if you get it pretty wide, would work for that. And so that you're actually trading the object for the object. Again, I tried earlier in my career to kind of use, I would think, oh, I'm going to show them this goldfish, and they're going to understand, you know, that that's what that is. But then there was no way to trade that because they would end up eating the darn thing that was supposed to be representative of it. So you got to cover it in some way.
And even then, sometimes they try and eat it,
Or
they smash it. They like to smash them under there. But sometimes for some things like an M&M or a Skittle, or if it's harder, you know, it might hold up the goldfish crackers, which are a perennial favorite, do get squished in there a lot. But and I think even PEX talks about doing that. I mean, you know, that you may use the actual object, particularly if it's a small food thing that you could cover somehow. And that's even certainly more obvious than a photo of that actual object.
Right. But if you can get them moved to a real life digital picture that you've taken that's very clear on an uncluttered background, that's probably the best way to go.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit about picking our motivators. Again, I try to have pictures of kids' favorite toys, a kid's favorite foods, anything that they would absolutely love, and that's what we're going to use first. And on the first day that we work on pictures, I don't have just one or two things. I'm going to, you know, have four or five things there and kind of figure out, okay, which one of these is going to work the very best for me today? Because sometimes the kids that we see might eat a snack 1 week and then the next week not want anything to do with it. So you're going to want to gather four or five different items and already have taken their pictures, already done the homework with, you know, getting the size right, getting the background right, everything, and have all that stuff ready before you decide that, you know, today's the day we're going to introduce the pictures. One other thing that I do is I always try to make sure, and we talked about this today too, so you can chime in with kind of your situation with this, is I always try to make sure that there's another adult there to do it. So as a mom, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, okay, great, I'm going to do all this, I'm going to try this at home, you really need to have another person there to help you implement this system with your kid, because one person is going to sit behind the child and help them actually pick up the picture and give it to the person who is the prompter or the person who's holding the objects. And I think it works so much better when you have two adults there to do it. That's not always practical. Kate, I think you have some kids that you've said you've just had to go it alone because you haven't always had a parent that's really as participatory in the process as you would like.
Right. Ideally, I do, and I understand it really depends on the child as to how necessary that is, but for particularly for kids who are on the spectrum and initiation is such an issue and they don't tend to be spontaneous communicators. I get the theory behind why they say you need that partner, two people, one to kind of initiate the exchange and one to implement it and help the child make the trade, because they want them to learn to be self-communicators and not need a prompt all the time, you know, not need somebody to be in their face cueing them to either say it or trade it or whatever it is.
Right. And so really, I mean, it's a deal breaker for me in therapy if I don't have another adult there. I will wait and not do PECs with a kid or not introduce it. Or that's something I might talk to a parent about, or if we're in a daycare situation. And I really honestly have not done lately at all even used PECs with a kid who's in a daycare situation. But that might be something that I would say is I've got to have another adult here before we even start to implement that. You know, we have a little set of boys on our caseload right now that they're two of a set of triplets, and we have for several weeks have talked about whether we're going to start to do some pictures with them and implement PECs with them. And I always say I don't want to do it unless I have another therapist there to help me, and, you know, both these parents work and they have a nanny there. That's great, but she's got to take care of the other kids while I'm there. So, again, from a practicality point, I don't even know that I want to introduce it if a family's not going to be able to carry it over, or if they're not going to have a two-adult buddy system there to be able to help a kid learn the system. But I feel more strongly about that than you do.
Well, you're probably right, but it depends on the child, I think. You know,
well,
I guess
does,
if I think it's probably going to be a long-term thing and the child has more significant issues, then I feel more strongly. If I think, gee, this kid just needs to get the concept that words have meaning, and because particularly for those kids who have some words but don't use them functionally, those kids I've had pretty good luck with doing the pictures myself, but for kids who aren't at that level yet, I could see why you feel very strongly, you need both people, you need two people.
Yeah, so. I think so too. The other thing that you have to do is this isn't really the kind of system to really be effective that you use just the day that you have speech therapy or just the day that, you know, you come for DI. It really is a system that you're going to, if you think a kid is a good candidate for this, and again, you've exhausted kind of all your other systems, he's not going to be able to sign, he's not going to be able to talk yet, he hasn't gotten that whole gesture thing to the point that a parent can really understand what he wants, you are going to want to be able to implement this a lot and practice this a lot. So again, if parents aren't on board with it, I probably wouldn't even think about introducing it if they weren't going to be pretty committed and be able to practice. The PECS manual or the PECS system says that a child really isn't going to be able to carry this over or learn to do this unless he has an opportunity to trade pictures at least 30 times a day. And that's a lot when you break it
mm-hmm.
down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a prerequisite for me, is that we have some opportunities to practice, and not just the 1 hour a week that we're in speech therapy. That, you know, we have opportunities to use that throughout the week. I will say that I've had luck even using some older brothers and sisters who were kind of consistently home and who were pretty trainable. I would say they probably have to be 7 or 8 before they could really be helpful. But that's another avenue, or a grandparent, you know, might be able to really learn the system. And especially if you're a mom listening to this thinking, oh, this isn't going to work for me because dad works a bazillion hours a week and, I don't have anybody else here. You might think about kind of a non-traditional partner to help you get started with this too. Okay, and one other thing that I wanted to mention before we kind of talk about, I guess we should just do this first. Let's talk about how this looks. You know, we've talked about all the background stuff about how we organize our pictures, how we pick our motivators, and by motivators we mean the thing you're going to take a picture of that the kid's really going to want. Let's talk about how this whole system actually works. And so what happens is I'm always on the floor when I do it, but I think the PECS video, they actually have a table, but we treat kids at their home, so I almost always am on the floor. And I sit there, or have mom sit there and have the item that the kid really, really wants. The kid is across from me, seated on the floor wherever in the beginning. I like to be right in their little faces so that they kind of see me there and know what's going on. And the picture is right in front of the child on the floor. And the adult who is the prompter holds up the item, and you're not supposed to say anything other than choo-choo or candy or whatever the picture is or the item is. And then the second adult who is seated behind the child helps the kid. You know, you physically take his or her hand, reach down, pick the picture, and then the prompter, oh, I forgot the part about the prompter. I'm not doing a great job explaining this, so jump in when you need to save me, Kate.
Okay.
The prompter, or the adult who has the item, is supposed to just place their hand, their outstretched hand, open right in front of them, and then the adult behind the kid helps the kid pick up the picture, places the picture in the other adult's hand, and then you immediately give the thing to the kid. And I think the PECS manual says that you use a single word or you use the phrase the adult can prompt it with choo-choo or I want choo-choo at some point. And then that's really all the talking you're supposed to do. You're not really supposed to do a lot of Give her the picture, and you can get what she wants. Look, here's the picture. See, there's the picture. If you want it, you need to put it in her hand. Put it in her hand. Go ahead, get it. That is a mistake that so many people make, is really bombarding the kid with too much language when you're trying to teach the initial part of the system. And PECS is designed to mostly be a nonverbal system, meaning that kids don't have to have words and that you're supposed to be quiet and let them learn the process and see the process rather than overdo it with lots of verbal cues.
And I have some trouble. when I'm the communicative partner, I don't say, get the picture, but I do say, choo-choo. Want choo-choo, choo-choo. Even that, they really do. I mean, they say it, but don't say it too much. And I'm good about using the single word, but I probably, you know, that's something I do all day, every day, and it's hard to turn that off for me.
Right.
So I stretch that a little bit.
Yeah.
Not too much, but, yeah, I mean, it's just hard. I just am so in the habit of saying the word repeatedly that I'm not saying get the picture. If I'm the only one or there's a I can't think of their term for the facilitator, you know, the one who helps them get the picture.
I think they call it, I don't know, I'm not sure. I call it the helper.
Yeah, they have a little term. It's like communicate partner, and I don't remember the other term for the person who assists the child in getting the picture and actually making the trade.
Maybe it's assistant or a sister. I don't know, but I usually call it the helper.
Yeah.
And another thing for a therapist that might be listening to this, or even for moms too, don't always have your therapist do the same role. Or if it's a mom and a dad, switch roles. So have the, sometimes I'm the person who sits behind the kid and helps the kid trade for the picture, and sometimes I'm the person who has the object that the kid wants and gives it to him. Because I have had kids get kind of so dependent on it being that other person, and I actually almost like it a little better when mom is the person who has the object or has the item. But sometimes that's too hard to do in the beginning because I want mom to see the right way to do it, so I might really model that or be the person who prompts the kid as far as holding up the item that they want, not talking too much, just getting my hand right out there so that that's so that they learn to do it the right way and don't kind of muddy the waters with their own versions of things.
But once they've kind of got it, it's good practice for them to be the one so that they are more likely to use it in real life, not just therapy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right, because you ideally, you know, you do want this to be something that they use all day, every day. So you want the mom comfortable with both roles. And the other thing that you want her to really accomplish is being able to teach that to other people. So you want her to see you do both parts and, you know, even if you have an older sibling there, have mom kind of teach the older sibling how to do it, where you're there kind of coaching mom and saying, okay, remember, tell her this, or, you know, you kind of interject and do the teaching too. So that's a good point, is that you're, going to have mom do both parts so that she and the kid don't get too dependent being in one role or another.
Because some kids, as we've talked about for weeks on end now, is particularly kids on the spectrum, they don't necessarily generalize real well. So to have always be one person be the prompter or the partner, then they might use it with Laura during speech, but if they don't use it with mom and dad and grandma and, their preschool teacher or whomever, then it's not much of a system. So we need to make sure that whatever we're teaching, we make sure they can use it in different settings so that it's functional for them.
Absolutely. One other mistake that parents, and we've seen therapists do this too, and actually we had a caller several weeks ago, or I guess a couple of months ago now, talk about how their speech pathologist used pictures in a setting, in a therapy setting with a kid, and what the parent said that this therapist did is that she just laid out a bunch of pictures of toys, and whichever one she thought the kid, didn't she say looked at?
Looked at.
Whichever one the kid looked at is what she decided that kid wanted, and so she used that as kind of the system, the whole system, and that is a horrible, horrible idea. Pat really talks about using...
Tell us how you really think, Lark.
I know.
You even
terrible
said to
idea.
Her, you said, I would never do that. That was pretty forceful for you. It was just a silly. And the child was young, and the child was non-communicative, and it was like, oh my. I mean, where they came up with that one, I don't know. It was just goofy.
Totally goofy. I can't believe that a professional would even do that. Somebody needs to take her C's back from her. That's a little.
Yeah, hopefully she's moved on to a new therapist by now.
Hopefully, I know.
Yeah, we didn't know her personally, so, we're not making a statement about an individual. But anybody who had introduced, and I think that child was 18 or 19 months old at the time. Now, come on.
Little, probably didn't even understand that the picture represented the toy he wanted.
I don't think that a totally typically developed 18 or 19 month old would get, oh, I looked at that one, so that means that's what I want. I mean, that would take time to teach that.
Yeah,
right.
way too abstract. So you just want to start with one thing at a time. You're not going to have all your four or five things that we talked about getting pictures that a kid really likes, maybe a couple foods and maybe two or three toys that they really like. You're not going to lay all those out at one time. You're going to trade one picture at a time. And as the adult, you're going to sit there and say, let's see if he's going to like, what Elmo. Let's see, if he's going to want Elmo today. You're just going to hold up Elmo and say, Elmo, want Elmo? And then have only the picture of Elmo right there. And so you're going to just do that one-to-one trading with that one object that you think they're really going to like several turns. And then when you see that the kid's kind of tired of playing with that or tired of eating that, then you're going to move on to another different picture, and you're just going to trade the picture for that item one-on-one for a long time. You're not going to ever put in these first few sessions or these first few levels, or I think, what's the word Peck uses, phases? In that first phase, you're not going to ever have two pictures there so that they're choosing. You're going to really want to teach that trading piece first. So if you have a speech pathologist, or if you are a speech pathologist who just goes in and suggests to parents that we're going to take pictures of everything in the house and we're just going to label it and put it all up everywhere, and whenever he touches it, you're going to get that for him. That is a horrible way to introduce a picture system. You really need to just stick to that one-on-one trading until you know that a kid really has gotten that and that concept is solidified.
Yeah, that's a common mistake that some therapists and a fair number of parents make. They think, oh, I guess the basic assumption is that they get it. They get these pictures mean. They represent the actual object, and if I get the picture, I get it, and they assume their child gets it, and they should absolutely assume that they don't get it at all until there's proof that they really get it.
Right, and again, that's a mistake that I think a lot of people make. The other thing that PECS really does is kind of outline first, you know, you do that one-to-one trading, and then you make sure that there are lots of things that you can trade with. And then the next phase of that is actually called proximity trading. And that means that your kid is going to learn how to seek out a person to give his picture to. So he's going to actually reach across maybe, you know, further than just that really sitting there. Eventually, they want kids to be able to pick up the picture and take it across the room to an adult and get the item that they want. And that's one thing that we do with our little girl with Rett syndrome, with her switches. We move those all around so that she has to really look for her Big Mac switch to tap. It's not always in one place. We've really trained her to kind of look for that switch. And with her, I am more verbal, and I think you probably are too, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
Get it, tell me, you know, where we shake the switch so that she really kind of notices that. But you don't leave it right in one spot. You know, you really want to help build in that piece of, I have to initiate this, so I have to work a little harder to get it to the person so that they know that that's the thing that I want. So that's called proximity training or trading. You're going to do it across different locations. And then once your kid has that, this is at the point where you would start what's called discrimination training or trading, and that's the point when you might introduce two pictures. But again, you don't use two things that a kid would want. You use one picture of the thing a kid would want and then another picture of something that they have no interest in or something. I like to use things they actually hate and are a little bit aversive to.
Right.
Because
that's the best. If they have something that they really hate, because that they're going to avoid, you know, more likely they'll really avoid it. Because if it's two things they like, you don't know if they really understand. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So you want to pick, when you get to the phase that you're ready, that you're going to really teach your child to discriminate or choose between two things, you know, I used to use things like a sock, or I had a picture of a leaf for a long time, and I would have to think, okay, gosh, I've got to actually go out and remember to pick up the leaf. And then I had some kids kind of try to eat the leaf, and I thought, that's a bad idea. Not doing that. Not sure my malpractice insurance covers that. So you want to pick something, again, that and then I had kids that really liked the sock. You know, they would try to put the sock on their hands like a puppet or, you know. So going with something that they hate, like kids who hate to have their hair brushed or their teeth brushed, that's what I would do. I would use a picture of, you know, something that they hate. For our little girl right now, we tried to use broccoli because her mom didn't think she liked that, and darn the day that we tried that, the picture of the broccoli, she ate the broccoli. So, again, it might be situational, and you might have to really look for something that they don't like.
Either is totally neutral, like a sock or some inanimate object, you know, a scoop for the Tide box, but, you know, then sometimes, like you said, you'll get kids that like them, or... like if they have sensory things, sometimes it can be a ball of Play-Doh, or some kids hate those squishy balls, you know, those gooey squishy things. Or it's best if they really don't like it, but if you, absent of that, then go with something that you know they're going to quickly lose interest in and be frustrated by or disinterested in. So.
Right. Our little girl that we're with, the little girl that we've been talking about, we use just a ball with her, and we don't have any other toys available for that, and this little girl really likes food, so we use a food and the ball, and we've rotated in some different kinds of food, or even her drink, her cup, and the ball. And so the ball, she gets it, but she's not a big holder like we talked about, so all she does is drop it, and it's not as motivating to her as something she can actually, she tries to eat the ball, but, you know, it's not as rewarding to her as the treat or the drink, so that's something that we've made work for her. Okay, and again, the idea there is you're going to put the two pictures right in front of them, and whichever one they kind of, you know, by this point, kids really kind of have the whole, I pick it up and I give it to you and I get that. Whichever picture they pick up and give to you is what you give them. And so if they keep repeatedly picking that picture that they don't want, the idea is they're going to realize, oh, I keep giving her this one, I better try the other one. And this, the kids that I've done this with, this works pretty well if you stick to the plan and really use the thing that they don't want as on the picture. They do get that. You do see them start to kind of look like, oh, which one? You know, you can see their little eyes.
I don't want that stupid sock. Yeah.
Or you'll have kids that get really mad. And you do have to, at this point, I really do say, that sock, you gave me sock. You know, and I probably do more verbal prompting and verbal cueing there than Pex would really like. But, again, that's the only way that you know that they're really making a choice. I used to have a mom, oh, and this would drive me crazy. Several years ago, this was a TV kid. He loved movies. And so she cut out the pictures from the VHS tape or the case. She cut the pictures out, and she would say, you know, she would have Barney or Thomas. Well, he's going to pick one of them, you know, and she would tell me all the time, he can choose because I give him these two pictures, you know, because I would say, no, we're not to discrimination yet. We're not going to do that yet. We're not ready for that yet. And she would tell me all the time, well, I offered him cookies or candy. And, again, she didn't really know which one he truly wanted because she never really gave him the opportunity. So you want to build that into your sessions with your kid or when you're working with your kid at home and find something that he really doesn't like, because that's the only way that you're going to really know that he's discriminating or really understanding the difference between those pictures.
And for some kids, that's fairly you know, simple process, and for other kids it can take a very long time for them to really learn to attend to the pictures, look at the pictures, and then discriminate between the pictures, because they've learned I hand it to them, I get them, but they're really not looking at the picture and making that connection between, oh, look, it's a picture of a fish. I like fish crackers. I'll give you the fish. They've really just learned to hand it off,
right,
which is the first step. The next step, and a very big step, is to learn, I hand you the fish, I get the fish. So that's a huge part of the process, and you need to make absolutely certain that your child gets that part.
Right, and I don't do discrimination training for a long time. I have kids really trading for lots of different things with lots of different people, and again, over different locations, like we have to take the picture across the room to mommy or a different chair to mommy. I have them really doing that for a while before we move on to discrimination training, except for, again, I keep talking about our sweet little girl that we're both working with right now. We did move on to it with her because, again, she's kind of a different situation because she loves to smack, and we felt like, okay, this is how we're going to teach her. And, again, I guess that would be the same for any kids when you're really teaching discrimination, but we moved on with her probably a little quicker than I would have normally done that.
Yeah, and, I'd say it depends on the child. I've had some kids that I introduced discrimination pretty quickly, but they started out higher than, yeah, they got it. And it was very obvious that they got it. But, you know, I do caution folks trying to implement this at home that make doubly sure they really get it. You'll know if they're wanting the fish cracker and handing you the sock or the Play-Doh ball or whatever your non-preferred item might be, if they're routinely, you know, basically 50% of the time giving you the wrong thing, they really don't get it.
They don't get it. And you need to back up and, again, work on some other things. And you can keep working on it. You just need to know, okay, this is a real hurdle for them, and I'm going to have to spend lots of time and energy doing this. PEX also moves on to the sentence level. You know, I want, and even some commenting, I see. And, again, I hardly have children get that far because either decided we're ready to sign or ready to talk, and we still might use PEX, but I hardly ever get kids there. I don't know if you've had children.
Never.
Okay.
Never. But we see kids who are 0 to 3, and that would be very appropriate for an older child.
Right. And so
they either, like you said, go move on to signs and words, or they're not at that level yet, even when I stopped seeing them at 3. So, but I could see where older kids, that would be certainly part of the process. not for kids I've worked with. Yeah.
Right, right, just because of our population. All right, we're almost at the end of our hour. Do you think there's any other caution or any other tip that we didn't give parents that we wanted to give them? I we really talked about that you want to pick things that a child really likes at first. You want to use digital pictures, not board maker or any other little line drawing. You want to leave the pictures big so that the kid can see them and actually manipulate the item or the picture pretty well. Did I say laminate them already? We want to laminate them so that they will last. Also, if you have a kid who really is who gets mad, I have a little boy who I used to joke about all the time and tell Kate, gosh, he tried to tear up the picture again. He tried to really rip the laminated picture completely in half. You know, that's how we spent the session, is wrestling over the pictures. So laminating does make them a little bit more durable. We've talked about that you really need to have two people to correctly implement this at first, although maybe in a certain situation you would think, okay, I really have to make this work with one person, but ideally you're going to want to have two people. You're going to want to give your child opportunities to practice this a lot, not just 1 hour a week. You're going to want to be able to do that. And the big thing that Kate and I both struggle with, you want to do this without lots of verbal instruction or without, give him the picture, get the picture, get the picture, where's the picture, where's the picture? You know, you're going
to
want
to put it in my hand, give it to mommy, give it to me.
You can't have it unless you do it. You can't have it.
Yeah, because these are, kids whose words tend to shut down because they're not particularly meaningful, and that blah, 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 blah stuff turns them off. So you don't want to bombard them with words, 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 words. We want the few words we use to keep on meaning. And the way to do that is to use fewer and make them very meaningful by using those pictures for trading.
Absolutely. And you want to trade one item or one picture at a time, especially at the beginning, and you want to have them picking lots of different or trading for one item at a time for a pretty long time, or have it pretty solidly mastered before you move on to teaching trading across distances, or, again, the word I kept using is proximity, meaning, you know, we're going to not be right in front of them. We're not going to be as close to them. And then the big thing that people mess up all the time is the discrimination part. You don't really want to offer two or three pictures until a child has mastered discriminating between something he likes versus something he doesn't like. And I think I alluded to this. You really don't want to start with pictures up all over the house and trying to work with 75 different pictures, or have your kid trade you for something like sitting on the potty chair, you know, something that you really want to pick things that they really like and stick with those tried and true things. You know, you really aren't going to want to have them trade for every single thing every time when you first introduce the system. You need to pick a few things that they really, really, really like.
I think that's a pretty good basic introduction to picture exchange, at least. That's been my approach. Thanks to you, Miss Laura.
Well, you have really done a good job, too, of keeping your pictures organized, something that I struggle with. And we talked about this a second ago. The therapist that you mentioned before had a great way to keep hers organized. She had them in a little book and probably had the Velcro strips. And all those things organized in a way. And that's something that we could probably talk about, or I'll put on the website too, little organizational tips. I don't really do that. I'm the big Ziploc bag person, so I just keep my laminated pictures in a Ziploc bag. But having kind of a way to keep yourself organized is a good idea too. But if you're just introducing the system, don't feel like you have to rush out and do the whole big 300-picture album first. You're going to want to start small and make sure your child has mastered the steps before you spend a lot of money or invest a lot of time.
And I'm sure that the PECS website has pictures of the books that they sell, and they're great books, but they're not cheap. I've just done my own with using a binder and the kind of thick plastic divider pages, and then I just buy the sticking Velcro strips, and it's not a huge investment, but it is a process to get it all together, and it's helped me keep mine together. But I'll sometimes make little books for families where, you know, I'll put them together. Sometimes I'll put magnets on the back of the food, you know, those real good food items that we know the kid's going to want to have, I'll put them on the fridge with little sticky magnets on the back, because then they're right there where you're going to be reaching for them. But
right,
yeah,
but
start
after,
out small.
Yeah. But you do that after you kind of know that that's what a kid is going to use. And you would never walk into a house and stick a picture on a fridge and just expect a kid to automatically know, I go over, get that picture, give it to my mom, and I get the milk.
No.
And there are a whole lot more steps in between it, in between
right.
those two things.
That's after I know that child understands that fish picture means if I give it to mommy, get fish. Yeah, it's not
right.
initial thing at all.
And sometimes you can accomplish that in a day. Sometimes that takes weeks, and unfortunately for some children, that takes months, just
mm-hmm.
that consistent really practicing and training. And that's not something I would do with a kid for a whole hour, you know, in a therapy session. We would mix it up a little bit, so just wanted to throw that tip out there, too. You don't have to have these hour-long sessions where you practice that. You know, you might do 6, 7, 8 times and then move on to something else and then trade for something else that he would want after you've played with a toy or two or, you know, done a little routine like ring around the rosies or something else. I would never sit down with a kid and expect him to have the attention span to trade with me over an hour. So
no.
That's another
point. I mean, the only way I would is if I already had been working with the child for quite a while and I knew he was going to be picking the whole process up pretty quickly and I already knew a lot of toys that he liked. You know what I mean?
Would still let the kid play with the toy when he got
it. He would trade it, but then we'd play with the toy.
Right.
And for some kids, you might not have any toys they really like to play with initially.
Right.
So part of the process is we're teaching them to like the toys as we're introducing the whole PEX thing. So you're right.
Right.
It might be the break that they're going to get their fish crackers or their juice cup or whatever want to nibble on, and then we go back to whatever we would have done and not trade during that time.
Right, and that's what I meant. But when you're doing the fish crackers, you know, you're going to want them, you know, to have 7 or 8 crackers and sit there and do that. Then you get up and play, and then you might come back and trade 7 or 8 times to get a juice cup. Now, I wouldn't do a trade and let them have a toy or the item for 10 minutes, you know, and then trade again and let them have it for 10 minutes. I would never do that. You know, that would be, you know, maybe a minute or so in between where they got to play with the toy or whatever, and then we would do it again because I would want more focused practice. I'm just trying to say I would never expect a 2-year-old to sit there and trade with me repeatedly for an hour session. That was
right.
My point.
I guess one thing that we assume is self-evident but we never mentioned was keep whatever that treat is small. You know, don't give them two big full-size adult Oreo cookies because, hey, they're happy. Yeah, we like the itty-bitty bite size. The smaller the goldfish, the better. The baby Oreos, the little Teddy Graham cookies, the one Skittle, because we want them motivated to want more. And I have parents do that on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah.
And I want to say, don't give them the bag of chips. You know, then we're done.
Give them one little piece.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't even give a whole chip unless I have a kid who falls apart if I break
it. Yeah, unless they go to pieces when you break it, which they're out there. My kids tended to be that way anyway. But, you know, yeah, just keep it small. Keep them wanting more because we do want them motivated to communicate. And if they've been satisfied, then they're done.
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
That's just human nature.
Yeah.
So we should say that. Yeah. Keep your snacks little.
Good point. And on that, I think we're going to wrap it up for tonight. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks, Kate.
I've made it to Shelbyville Road. Woohoo!
I cannot believe you're still in the car.
Oh,
the
whole time.
How long have you been in the car? 2 hours?
I got in the car at 5:07.
Oh, my gosh. I cannot believe that.
From Smyrna Road.
Well, this is our off-topic thing for the night. I did want to say one more thing. Happy birthday to my mother. It's her birthday.
Oh, happy birthday to our number one listener.
That's right. Okay, that's it for
tonight.
Okay,
bye.